What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome you into another edition of Meet Me at Mutual, our 60th episode, and we've got a few things to talk about for the fact that it's been a slow off season, but a few warming things as we get a little closer to spring training starting off. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter, and with me as always is Alan Medlock, AMedlock1 on Twitter, and at the Redbird Daily. Alan, you know, obviously, we've got winter warm-up that happened last weekend, and at the time, John Mozeliak kind of said, we don't really see any moves coming, and Bill DeWitt said we don't see any big moves. And then yesterday, they send out Randall Grichuk to Toronto. let's not get into why they said or what they said, but let's just talk a little bit about this deal. It was kind of came out of nowhere, because I think all of us kind of gotten settled in on Grichuk as a fourth outfielder. In fact, I think he even said it was kind of surprising that he kind of thought both he and Stephen Piscotty would get traded this season. It was a little surprising he was still here, and of course now he's not. What do you think? I mean, a couple of relievers come back, one that's probably going to be in the bullpen this year, one that's more of a minor league prospect to start out with. What's your initial take on this?
Well, I was surprised too, as late as it was. And you know, and anybody that listens to us on the regular knows that I'm a pretty big Grichuk guy, and thought that, hey, extra base hits, you got 20 doubles, 20 homers, be a great bench bat. And I really thought that him being that fourth outfielder that can play every position really lengthened the roster. I thought it was, I thought he had slipped through the cracks. I thought it was going to work out well, and I really thought they were deep. That being said, it makes a lot of sense. You know, they bring in and basically fill that Alcantara role with Green and then bring in a reliever who was really good last year. And another one of those to where they're just kind of throwing arms at that bullpen problem just to kind of load up in every spot and build from the front to the back instead of the back to the front being the closer. And we'll see how that plays out. But I kind of hate to see him go. I always liked Grichuk. I always liked the raw power. And, you know, his time here may have run out. And when you look at it, he is it would have been an expensive bench bat when you have two guys that are arguably maybe a little bit different, but he's not that much better. You know, they could save a little bit of money there. And not that money's the issue, but you know where I'm going. Mm-hmm. Grichuk, I mean, he's at that point now to where he's only going to go up, basically, in fees because it's going to go through arbitration every year. Yeah. So it makes a ton of sense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kind of want to throw the question to you because I thought about you the minute that I heard it, because it was one of those to where it kind of stinks for him to go, because I really thought that made the bench, but I thought that you would be happy about it just because they put more of those proven pieces in the bullpen.
Well, I mean, it does depend on if you believe that, Leon is proven, and that's the kicker. You had a very good year last year. You're right. I mean, a 2.56 ERA, 70 innings, struck out 81 in that span. You know, his whip was just, you know, 1.05. It's not terrible. But the problem is the couple of years before that were kind of shaky, and he's on his fourth organization since 2014. And so you start, you know, how much is going to translate, but for the most part, yeah, it looks like a guy that can plug into the seventh or eighth, and just add to that, with the fact that Gregerson's probably now our closer. We'll kind of get to that a little bit later on. At least as of right now, it's just another arm. And it's going to be very interesting. I think that's the biggest thing is, we're going to see what Mike Maddux does with this bullpen, I think. And I say that more than Mike Matheny, because I think Maddux is going to show, you know, he's going to be the guy that's going to be in charge of a lot of these decisions. And, you know, or at least going to give a whole lot strongly recommended, things. And so it's going to be interesting to see how these guys get used. But, you know, yeah, Leon's got a pretty good, repertoire, it looks like. And so I'm interested to see what he brings. You know, again, we thought we had a lot with Cecil last year, after a couple good years in Toronto, and, that didn't pan out last year. Hopefully it will this year. Yeah, if he can come in and do something close to what he did last year, this is probably a win. I mean, Grichuk gets a chance to play every day. He'll probably could have a very good season playing every day, but he's a guy that probably should play every day. We talk a lot about the Cardinals having guys that, well, they could start on any other team, and whether that's true or not, it seems to be the case here with Grichuk. He could start. He will start in Toronto. And I'm looking forward to seeing how well he does up there. But, you know, it works out. You've got Harrison Bader is probably your four. You know, Tyler O'Neill might get into that mix, but according to our prospect expert and Kyle Reese, Bader's pretty much closest to his ceiling. Tyler O'Neill still has some developing to do. So hopefully, you know, we'll get a chance to see some Bader, and he can play all three positions, brings a little bit to the bench. But you're right. It would have been interesting to have Grichuk and, you know, a lot of times Jose Martinez, you know, and if they'd been able to do something else, that bench could have been a little bit better.
Yeah, that was I was glad that I felt like that was a good, he fit that role well of bringing of having power and being athletic enough to play any of the outfield positions and not hurt you at any of them. So made a lot of sense, but I mean, I see where they're coming from with this. I'm surprised there was a trade. I really thought that any addition they would have at this point, I thought was going to be through the free agent market. And, you know, they proved us wrong. It sounded like this was been in the works for a little while. I mean, you got to read between the lines that they've kind of stayed in contact throughout the offseason, whether that's with Donaldson, whether that was with Ozuna, or however, whoever the Cardinals were looking to get and whoever Toronto was wanting to get in return. But this also goes through the pipeline, and I know that we'll be talking about this later. Shapiro and Mozeliak have done a lot of stuff together. Mm-hmm. And it just makes a lot of sense that it would be something like this. And Mo had even brought that up to say that we've been in contact this entire time, but we just didn't know. We knew that a deal like this could get done. We just weren't sure what the pieces were going to be. So makes a lot of sense. I don't like to see him go, but I get it. And this is about the time he probably would have gone anyway. If he would have gone any earlier in the year, I would have been much less surprised, because I really did think that he was going to go. But even in the beginning of the offseason, I'd even said that I would much prefer Grichuk over Piscotty for those reasons. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it makes a ton of sense, and they're fortifying the bullpen, and that's all we've asked for.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you want. They've talked about the Cardinals needing a couple more relievers, and this, you know, brings back to, like I said, I think Green's going to be, you know, I don't really know where Connor Green starts the year. I'm sure Kyle will have some talk about him. I think he's doing a prospect Q&A tomorrow.
I purposely didn't ask about him because I knew there would be about 50 other questions, and it would be easy to figure out.
Even if he doesn't get asked about it, he's gonna be talking about it. But
good
looks
point.
Like Green pitched at Double-A last year, young for the league a little bit, and struggled there. I'll be, you know, frankly, I mean, he's got a 5.29 ERA as a full season of Double-A. It won't hurt him. He'll probably spend some time in Springfield. You know, the guy's got a big arm, but still looks like he needs to control it. I mean, oof.
Yeah.
You look at this 132 innings last year. He struck out 92. You'd expect more of a strikeout ratio from a guy that can throw 100. Then he walked 83. I mean, that's, you know, I told you, I think, or somebody. I had a couple of different conversations going at the same time, so it may not have been you. But, you know, somebody pointed out, hey, the guy throws 100. That's got to be good. Well, yeah, well, Mikel Clito threw 100 too.
Mm-hmm. That's all we heard. You're exactly right.
And he never had any idea how to use it. Never had anything else and never could control it. And, you know, he kept bouncing around because people get excited about the big arm, but he never developed into anything. And, you know, right now, I don't want to write that Green off because, yeah, he's 22. He's in at double A. He's not behind or, you know, development or anything. He's just going to need some more time.
Sure. And, you know, that's, as much as we hate to say it, because I do think he plays a big part this year, but look at Tui Valala.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, you know, not necessarily the walk situation, but, you know, the big arm that doesn't strike out a lot of guys, you know, so it happens. I mean, we've got outside of Cleto, you know, have some, you know, recent times, so.
Well, somebody pointed out, I think it may have been Cardinal Rant, maybe on Twitter. I don't remember exactly who it was, but pointed out, he said, you know, there's one guy that can change the entire look of this bullpen immediately. And that's Tui Lavalla.
I mean, I agree. No.
Yeah. I mean, if he comes out, and last year was pretty solid. I mean, I look at his numbers, but yeah, I mean, you're right. He struck out 34 in 42 innings. You'd kind of like to see those numbers reversed, you know, 42 and 34, you know, over an inning, a one. And his command was, you know, not great, not bad. I mean, he had a whip of 1.087. I mean, not bad. He seems to be maybe making those steps that we're hoping to. But yeah, sure. If he can bring that arm to bear, you know, suddenly you go from a kind of questionable one to a really interesting one. You know, if Tui Lavalla can make that step, and if Leon's for real, and Gregerson comes back to what he was before last year, you got Tyler Lyons out there, whatever's left of Matt Bowman. You know, and I keep hoping, knocking on wood, and hoping that maybe we'll see a better Brett Cecil this year. You know, there's a lot. I mean, that's a lot of ifs. Now, I grant that, but I don't think it's impossible to believe that you put that batch of people together, and they very well could be. If everything clicks for this year, it could be a really dominating bullpen.
Yeah, it'd be interesting, and that's, you know, a dark horse. Another one. I completely agree with all of you. With everything that you just said. But, you know, think about Sheriff.
Oh, yeah.
If Sheriff was a reliever on another team, we'd be wanting to get him.
Hmm.
You know, it's one of those things. You're just like, oh, that's an intriguing reliever. So that's, you know, 6-8 names right there that could make them really good. And that's not, and we're not even talking about any of the kids yet, which I think is kind of being oversold a little bit. But yeah, it's promising. I mean, I know that this is another thing that we're getting into. I think they've improved. Hmm. I really do. And I may be drinking the Kool-Aid as well, but I just think that they put the pieces in place. And I don't know, did you get a chance to hear Mozeliak on the on the Bernie show this week? It was really, really good.
No, I saw some quotes, I think, come through on Twitter, but I didn't actually listen to it.
Well, it was funny because he brought it up and they were talking about Gregerson and the things that he had done. And Bernie had specifically brought up Fangraph stuff in response to Gregerson. And Mo cut him off and goes, we know what they do and they do great work. He goes, I'm looking at the chart right now and it disagrees with the Fangraph chart. And that's all he would get into. So, you know, their algorithms that they're doing, I would really like to see because you can tell that they turned over just about every stone with everybody they're getting.
Oh yeah. And I mean, you know, that's what he told us at Blogger Day last year, basically kind of that idea that, you know, everybody's talking about launch angle now, and they were looking at launch angle a couple of years ago. You know, they have the data for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And whatever's out there now is kind of passe for the front offices because they've gotten better stuff. They have better stuff than anything that's out there. And so, yeah, I can see that. The problem is, you know, you get that, well, we know better. We got better stuff, you know. And they, you know, like I said, they do have better stuff, but if you start relying on that and you say, well, we're going to, you know, we see this differently or we see this that way, blah, 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 it better work. Because if it doesn't, you know, then you start, you know, why do you have all this, you know, what are you doing? If we can see this, you know, if we can see this guy's going to be trouble and then he becomes trouble, you know, why couldn't you see that?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, that's definitely the balancing act that they have to do. And I mean, it's one of those, unfortunately, they probably don't care what any of us think, but there is a definite, It does come off of we know we're so much smarter than everybody else in the room type situation, but it didn't really come off like that when he said it, you know. So it was funny too. I also heard Bill DeWitt on. It may have been Bernie. Now that I think about it, it was on Bernie earlier the week, and he mentioned something on Gregerson that I thought was funny, and he mentioned that yes, he did give up a lot of home runs last year, and that was kind of, they think that's the outlier. Yeah. And he specifically said a lot of it was due to the Crawford boxes. He said that in the ballpark. I didn't go back and research. I didn't look. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't even know where to go look to find out how true that is. But I did find it very, very funny that he did say that.
And I've seen enough. Yeah, let's look at this. Spray chart here on Fangraphs. I mean, this is not going to tell me. This is everything. This doesn't tell me. But I'm not seeing. You know, I don't see that there's a whole lot of extra there.
I mean, just at
what I'm seeing. You know, like home runs. No, that's 2016. Okay, that may be why. Okay, never mind.
you were a step ahead of me.
Let me pull the. Because I was like, there's only like five home runs there. Why? You know, this can't be right. Let me refresh the chart here and see if that. I can see that a little bit now when I look at this chart. You know, just looking at his home runs for the year now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them, you know, went to right field. But there is a group right here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 here that actually, yeah, 6 of them here that, I mean, again, this is everything. This is not all, but I could see where they would be landing in the Crawford boxes.
Interesting.
And so, you know, that, yeah, obviously guys like Zach Gifford and Joe Schwartz could do a lot more of this. I'm just grabbing a chart and looking at it.
Exactly.
I don't know what I'm doing, but just, you know, when you give me that piece of information and you take this chart and you look at it, I could see a little bit of that. Now, I guess the question is, why did he run into that kind of problem this year, or last year in 17 and not in 16? Because 16 he was in Houston and had a pretty decent year. You know, did he lose a mile per hour of his fastball? Did he do, you know, was he just not putting it in the right spot? Did the ball, it's just fluke, which it very well may be. I mean, that's some of that. That is the home run rate is really the biggest reason I think that Gregerson's going to come back. See, I mean, so much out of line with what he has done in his whole entire career that, you know, either he's lost it and he's, you know, going to decline rapidly, or it was a fluke, and obviously the Cardinals feel like they have the information to show that was kind of a fluke, and we'll see if they're right. Hopefully they are.
Yeah, I mean, it's just beneficial to the ball club. Like I said, I'm glad to have him back for the reasons that we talked about last week. I think it's interesting that he come full circle. But, you know, it is a gamble.
It is, and hopefully. And it's very interesting, like I said, we'll just kind of go into maybe a little bit of this winter warm-up talk that, that's where the Cardinals are going to go with as a closer. Again, not even factoring in last year. It's just the fact that he's only got 2 years of really closer experience. I mean, he's been a seventh, eighth inning guy most of his career. Mm-hmm. Now, again, when you look at this roster, what's on it now, and even with the addition of Leon, you don't see anybody that just jumps out at you that he has to close. But it is a little bit surprising, and we've talked about this, a number of people have talked about this over this week. Cardinals talking about not wanting to pay the prices for closers, which I get that. That makes sense. And we talked about that earlier in the year. When they were talking about getting a closer, we said, why are they going to spend their money on Greg Holland or Wade Davis when, you know, you don't have to? But it's just very interesting that the Cardinals start the offseason talking about, you know, getting a closer, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, we're not going to pay those prices. Well, the prices didn't change. The prices have probably actually gotten less. You know, why are you deciding, you know, and I wrote about it, I guess. I don't know if it was this week or beginning of last week. Some of the expectations that people are disappointed by were set by the organization. This isn't just fans saying, oh, they got to go get a closer. This was, you know, Mozeliak and company saying, we're going to get somebody to, you know, close games. And they did with Gregerson, but that really wasn't, that wasn't what they were looking at, or that's not the impression they gave to people.
Sure. Sure. That's, that will be, I don't know how to word it. That will be the breaking point of whether that during the season, whether everybody would think this will be successful or not, mm-hmm. is that the fact that they may have oversold or overplayed their hand. Now, kind of like, I know this is another question we're going to get to later, but, I feel like it's been a good off season just because they've gotten things that they said they were going to get. You know, they've got a pitcher with closing experience. They've got a big bat, and, you know, they're going to dabble in the starting pitch market and grab a, you know, a low cost starter. Well, they did them all. And it's not necessarily the names that we want, but they did do it. I do think that they improved. I think that we all thought there would be vast improvement because they were so geared up to do it. And I think a lot of those temptations came from that meeting that they had right after the end of the season, mm-hmm. season, where it made it sound like that's exactly what they were going to do.
Yeah. And they, like I said, they laid out what they wanted to do, and, you know, I'm sure they could, you know, go out and say we accomplished all these things, but, you know, yes, if as the internet meme goes, technically correct is the best kind of correct, but, you know, it feels like at times that is a technically correct. Yes, they technically went out and got a closer. It just wasn't a guy that you would expect to, you know, to be that closer. It wasn't the impression. That wasn't the expectation. The expectation was to go get a guy like Davis or Holland or trade for Colome or something of that nature. And that's not what they got. And again, you're like you said, you're right. We're going to see. You know, if Gregerson comes out there, and just, you know, is lights out, then great. It is interesting also, though, and this was a point that I was listening to the most recent Bird Law with Adam and Rusty, and I can't remember which one of them made the point. I think it was Rusty. Made the very interesting point, too, of with Gregerson being a solid guy in the ninth, a guy that's not going to be flashy, and he may blow some saves, but he's your ninth inning guy. In theory, this would then allow Matheny, who needs that ninth inning guy, to use some of his better relievers, Lyons or whoever it may be, in situations like the seventh and eighth where, you know, we keep talking about, hey, use your closer when the most important times. Mm-hmm. Well, now we always think the closer's the best pitcher. I guess this is what it's getting at. Maybe Gregerson's not the best pitcher, but he can go out there and close a game that's two runs, three runs.
Yes. You know. The veteran that can get guys out. Right. That's a great point.
It is. Wow, that makes a lot of sense. Now, one, that almost gives too much credit to the organization. And two, again, it's going to be Mike. We're going to see what Mike Maddox does. Because if we're asking for the creativity of Mike Matheny, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
But like you said, it may have been their way of, you know, roster proofing the roster or manager proofing the roster, like we've talked about before. So I don't know. I thought that is an interesting idea to look at.
It's a really interesting idea. And I have not heard the one that they've had, and I'm going to listen to it probably tomorrow now because I haven't heard the one that they put out, and they're both incredibly good baseball guys. Not to switch gears entirely, but I will say this that I found interesting in the interview as well, and it's something that I think we've overlooked a little bit, and I know that I have personally because I often think that it doesn't make that much difference if you could put truth serum in Mozeliak or you could get him away where you're off the record. I think he thinks outside of Ozuna and maybe on top of Ozuna, the biggest free agent acquisitions they made is the coaching staff. I think they fully believe that. And that leads me to believe that I don't think it was toxic, the clubhouse. I think that everything we thought was probably going on, but it also leads into, I think there needed to be a change, and it goes into something that you and I talked about a bunch, and we really talked about a bunch in the start, about how scouts and other teams thought that the Cardinals just looked disinterested last year. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're really stirring the pot by doing the things that they're doing.
Yeah, there was a number of comments that came out of winter warm-up that kind of said that as well, of, you know, this is our, you know, so you can't underestimate what we did with the coaching staff. I also think it's kind of interesting, maybe. I don't know how other teams necessarily do it, but it is kind of interesting when I think about it, that Mike Matheny really didn't hire any of these guys, except maybe John mm-hmm. Mabry still. You know, Maddox, McGee, Okendo, even Schilt being brought up and moved over. All of these, you know, Matheny might have been along with for the ride on those, but they're coming from the front office. And so that makes me think, you know, if Mike Maddox wants to do X and Mike Matheny wants to do Y, there's not necessarily a whole lot of pressure for Maddox to bend to what Matheny says, because Matheny's not going to be the one firing him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he wants to, you know, if he's going to make sure that the starter gets pulled after four innings because they're not looking well or whatever the case may be, I don't know who the, you know, and Matheny doesn't, you know, who's going to back who? I mean, who's the front office going to back? I don't know. I'm sure they'll all work together, and I doubt it comes up that much, but that's still, you know, it's kind of that idea that, you know, the boss is not the guy, you know, the guy that's going to fire you is not in that clubhouse.
Yeah.
The guy that's going to fire you is in the big suite up there. and I don't know,
yeah.
You know, I don't know how that dynamic changes things. It may not do anything, but it's just kind of an interesting look at me, look for me.
Yeah. And it's, that, in that situation too has really, I can be overly optimistic, and I understand that. And I'm always going to point it up when it comes to Cardinals baseball. I just feel like they push the right buttons, always have, and I've even seen them through the bad years. But that really, when I thought that through and you read some of the articles, I was like, you know what? I have a pretty upbeat feeling about this year for that reason. And it is going to be, you're exactly right. It's going to be an interesting dynamic to see how it all plays out, because it seems like now everybody, it's not necessarily a manager and the coaches. It seems like it's a manager and specialists.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean by that? I hope that makes sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. It's making me want to watch it too. I want the off season to be over. You know, I'm ready for spring to start for all these things.
Well, there's a lot of people out in the free agent market that would like that as well, because they're still sitting out there just, you know, a month away, less than a month away from camps opening. And there's guys like J.D. Martinez and Jake Arrieta, guys that you would never expect to not know where they're playing by now. And
it's going to come. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I'll go on. Of course, you're not going to miss any of those signings, but y'all go on MLB.com just to catch whatever. Yeah, it's. There's a lot of interesting stuff that's out right now, just because you can tell that the writers are scrambling for topics and they're kind of digging into some of their in-season material. It's really good. There's a lot of stuff going on. But then you look on that side there about the available players, and these are guys that we thought would jump off the, would be jumping off the screen early December.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still there. I mean, there's been a lot of flirtations with Martinez and Boston. Hosmer, that market's never cleared up. Mm-hmm. Moustakas, I don't think, has gotten an offer from anybody. It's just, it's very, very bizarre right now.
Yeah. And I agree. I mean, you know, we've talked about it before that we're kind of in agreement that it's more to us that the front offices are evaluating players basically the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And it really gets to the point they're starting to say, hey, look, we can pay you X amount of dollars, but we're not going to pay you for what you've done in the past. We want to pay you for what you're going to do. And that becomes, I mean, it's kind of tough on the players because, you know, they do some great work while their, you know, salaries are artificially low because they have to, you know, rookie caps and stuff like that. Yeah. And then they get out where they can make the money, and then the teams are going to say, well, but you're not going to do what you did, so we're not going to pay you. And, you know, I mean, it makes sense, but it's never been that way. But it feels like that's the way the clubs are approaching it now.
Sure, and that's, and I think that, I think you hit the nail on the head on that. And yeah, I mean, you can look at, Hosmer and Moustakas as perfect examples of that. You know, they played the system right. And this statement that I'm going to say does worry me about cohesion on the, between the players union and baseball before too long. Because everybody's known the system. It's, you take your lumps in the early and you get paid in the later. That's just how it goes. That's how the arbitration system works. That's working against some of these guys. And if it does another off season like this, which I don't expect next year because I think money will be flying because of all the big names, but it does worry me that this is the kind of stuff that will lead to a stoppage, whether teams are, or whether the union is going to want to cut back on an arbitration year. You know, or something along those lines to level it all out, because this is one of those situations where guys used to just get paid just because that's how things worked. Well, that's just not the case anymore. You know, it's people basically have that looking glass now. They can see a pretty good idea of what kind of player they're going to be and what value that's going to have. And it's a scary situation that I hope doesn't linger, because this is one of those work stoppages type cloud hanging over your head.
Yeah, I mean, there's a really decent chance of that. I mean, we're still 2 or 3 years away. I think this last CBA expires in 21, so we're a couple of years away from that. But it does feel like that there's going to have to be some sort of significant adjustment to the pay scale. I mean, whether it's, you know, really, like you said, cutting off of arbitration, getting rid of arbitration altogether. You know, maybe you make people, You know, I've seen some ideas about a restricted free agency instead of arbitration. You know, and getting rid of Super 2 or, you know, various things so you don't, you know, and so maybe the people aren't worried about the clock or, you know, they're paying people more to start out with. But, you know, it's to some degree it is what it is, unfortunately.
And that's
all you can do.
Yeah, and I love the system. I'm just afraid it's going to get, you know, blown out of the water if things keep going in this direction.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there's a lot more talk about, you know, the next CBA being a little more contentious than, you know, we're old enough. We remember 94.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, sadly, a lot of these players weren't alive in 94.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that there were, you know, there's institutional history. There's people that know that. They're not doing this. They're not going to rush into a strike just because they don't remember the last one. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's different owners and stuff around too. But, you know, this idea of, you know, implementing pitch clocks and stuff like that without their permission is not going to, you know, it's going to already put them in a bad mood, I guess, if you will, and not give you a whole lot of leeway. So, I don't know. Hopefully we won't have to worry about that and we don't have to for a few years, but, it's a scary thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else out of the warm up? Like I say, a lot of players come through. They say a lot of things. They use a lot of cliches.
I liked having Adam, you know, and Kevin and Joe this year there, just because they seem so easily you could reach them. Because I followed a lot. I mean, I asked Adam several times. I go, you know what? This could be the optimist in me. I go, it seems like there's a different mindset. It really seems much. He said, you know, even the post-dispatch guys were talking about that, how there's a lot of confidence right now that, it's really different than most years. They said that, players are really laid back and they think that there's some unfinished business involved. And I was like, I'm kind of glad that it felt like that. Cause a lot of times I feel like, hey, baseball's back. We're talking about it. I'm going to think it's good regardless. So I was glad that they were there to kind of verify that and kind of saw that it was industry wide. That may have been some of the case.
Well, and you got to think that they're a little bit interested. I mean, they're not ever going to say anything like this, but they've got to be somewhat buoyed by the fact, you know, look, you're going to play Cincinnati, and the Cardinals were not very good against Cincinnati last year, but Cincinnati's not going to be any better than they were.
Yeah.
They have not done anything. Joey Votto's a year older, and he's still very, very good. And there's still some, I mean, there's still good players there, but there's no reason to think they're going to make another step. Pittsburgh, you know, the trade-off, McCutcheon and Garrett Cole, that's some holes for them to try to figure out. Josh Harrison may be on the way out, too. Mm-hmm. Those teams not going to be very well. See, you know, you're right now, you know, one, you should hopefully be able to pile some wins up against those guys. But two, you know, it's the Cubs and the Brewers. And, you know, I don't know. It depends on how much you believe in the Brewers from last year. They're better, and they could still go out and get, I mean, they're still being rumored to talking with Arrieta or maybe Darvish or something like that. And if they get a pitcher like that, you know, maybe they're still in there. The Cubs are good. Cubs are still the divisional favorite. The Cubs are probably still better than the Cardinals, but, you know, their pitching staff is something we've been talking about the last couple of years, and it hadn't gotten much better. You know, they'll have a full year of Quintana, which I guess is a good thing, and they went and got Chatwood, which I guess we'll have to see, but, you know, John Lester's not that good. Well, he's starting to make, I think, kind of come to the end of his career. He's probably still got a couple of years left in him, but, and some of the others, you kind of, you know, what are you going to get out of Kyle Hendricks, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, there probably is some optimism that, you know, they can beat up on the bad teams and win enough games to, you know, even if they're not, you know, contending, which, I mean, what did they finish out last year? 8 games? They were less than 10 games out last year.
Oh, yeah, I think it was right at 9, but then again, they lost, you know, like 5 of their last 6, too.
Yeah, you know, they could easily be, you know, within 3 or 4 games of the Cubs, you know. I know you see some of the predictions putting them at 88, 90 wins right now. It's hard to argue too much with that.
Now, and, you know, a team that we didn't think was very good last year played in meaningful baseball until the last weekend of the season. You know, and they're not that far off.
Well, I mean, to some degree, though, that was because nobody else was any good.
Well, yeah, that's a good point.
You know, I mean, some of that, and, you know, some of that, maybe those teams aren't going to be, you know, it's really kind of a stratosphere this year of, you know, you can already look around and, hey, Miami's not going to be very good. You know, San Diego's probably not going to be very good. You know, what are you going to get out of, you know, Philadelphia? And, you know, I mean, you're already down to, you know, hey, this team's probably better than half the National League.
Sure.
You know, then it's, you know, half the National League, that means you're better than, what, 7 teams. Well, what, 5 teams go to the playoffs, so you only have to be better than what, another 2 or 3?
Yeah.
You know, you're right there, just from the fact that they were over 500 last year and they're better than they were, or they're right in that area, you know. They're in the contention right now, mm-hmm. just because of the way the divisions are. So, I mean, there's something there, but, yeah, I think it's, and you're right. I mean, well, and maybe there is some unfinished business. Maybe the Asuna trade gave them a little bit of excitement. Then, you know, that said, just gotta see it on the field. I mean, we had a great spring training last year. Didn't do any good. You know, a lot of excitement about Dexter Fowler last year. Didn't really click for a long while.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah. Hopefully the pieces fall into place.
Hopefully so. Okay. Well, that, you know, like I said, there was a lot of winter warm-up stuff. Like you said, follow those guys. Go back and check what Joe and Adam and, Kevin wrote. A lot of good stuff I come out of that both last weekend and through this week. And then I know they, like I said, the Bird Law podcast, they went over a lot of that stuff because that's, of course, Adam's on there. So, a lot there. We'll go ahead and move on. Go ahead and move on to our Twitter questions. We asked some of y'all to toss us a few questions, and we got a few. Seems like a good place to tackle these before we start talking about, you know, those favorite Cardinals again. Eric B 1980 asked us if the Grichuk trade is the end of their moves. Is the off season good, mediocre, okay, or underwhelming?
I think it's good. I believe in all the moves. I like that they checked off all the boxes that they said they were going to. And you're right. It may not have been the names or the magnitude that we thought that was going to happen, but they did do what they say they were going to do. I'm not convinced that this is the last move, but there's a part of me that kind of hopes it is, to where they can go into camp, figure it out. But I still, they seem short on the bench a little bit, especially since, you know, even Mo basically said that they're going with 13 pitchers. And, you know, so I guess that's, you leave you with four guys. So I think that would work. I worry about being exposed at shortstop for any extended amount of time, but my answer to the question is I think they did have a good off season.
Yeah. It's difficult to say any off season where you go get a Marcell Ozuna is, you know, underwhelming for sure. I mean, that was the second biggest trade probably in this offseason, just behind Stanton.
And you know my stance, and anybody that's listening to the show does, that Ozuna was my third pick that I wanted of the bats that were going to be available. I do think that if that didn't seem like possible, or if it would have gotten blown out of the water right away, I think the Ozuna trade would be lauded right now.
Yeah.
I think that people would be all over it, but I think that it's just so overshadowed by the chase for Stanton that, he won the Silver Slugger, 37 home runs, won the Silver Slugger, won the Gold Glove, and it's kind of an afterthought, really.
You know, it's kind of like, well, we were talking with Leon in a different way, you know, how much do you believe in him? How much do you believe that that's the step he need to make versus, you know, a career year that he's not going to be able to duplicate. You know, I know Zach Gifford was right with Birds in the Bat that, you know, he didn't find much in the deeper stats to indicate that Ozuna could do this again. But then some people point out that he changed his stance. You know, Barry Bonds got him closer to the plate. You know, he's going to, you know, maybe that should make it repeatable. We don't know. I don't know that he's going to hit like he did last year, but I think he's still got a, you know, 30 home run power for sure. And that's something. I mean, you added a 30 run home run bat into this lineup. That's got to be good, especially for the fact that you didn't give up but four minor league prospects, none of which, you know, maybe Alcantara might have made an impact this year. I still don't think you could see Sierra doing that, even if without the trade. So yeah, that by itself is probably a good one. You know, I think Gregerson is a good signing. Like I said, I'm still not 100% sure about a closer, but it's still a good signing. I'm interested to see what Mikolas does, because I think there's some real good potential there. And then you see them, you know, the trade off, get something for Alamedes Diaz, they get something for Stephen Piscotty, they, you know, do the trade for Grichuk. I mean, if nothing else, they're probably the most active team if you think about it. I mean, what's that? Four trades and two free agent signings? That's more than a lot of teams. That's more than some divisions did, I think. I think overall, you look at that, it's very difficult to think that it's anything more than good. Now, if the question, is it great or is it good? Yeah, I don't know that I could put it great right now. But, you know, if they went out and got Chris Archer, then yeah, maybe you're talking great, but, right now, it's definitely good, and a very, you know, possibly even very good.
Yeah, I agree with that. I read Zach's article, and it was, you know, it's one of those, I don't want to poke holes in it, I'm not arguing about it with it at all, but are they expecting 35 homers? You know, Holiday never hit 30 homers as a Cardinal. Now, he was a doubles machine and drove in a lot of runs. They just wanted a big piece. That's a scary middle of the order bat that you can't pitch around and you can focus your lineup on it. So even a drop off from Ozuna makes them better. You know, now if he repeats this year, they could have a monster offense.
Yeah.
But I understand where Zach was coming from with it, but I don't think their expectations are that he's going to hit 35 plus every year. And I don't think you can do that with any player, but the potential is there for him to do that.
Yeah. I mean, you look at him, if he does what he does in 16, when he hit 266 and 23 homers, that's a good bat. And, but I don't know that it's a fear factor bat because, you know, Stephen Biscotti wasn't too far off of that.
Sure.
You know, obviously not last year, but he never had that. It's still, those are numbers that are good, but do you want to build your offense around him? Now, you know, like you said, last year's 312 and 37. And I know these are the standard numbers, but still they're easy for short.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you look at that and it's like, okay, that's a potent bat.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think if he doesn't hit 30, I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad, off year, a terribly wasted year or anything, but I think he kind of needs to hit 30 to really be that middle of the order thumper that they think they're getting.
Yeah. You know what? Anywhere between 25 and 30, if you can mix in 30 doubles,
mm-hmm.
I do think you're at that elite. You know what I mean? That's kind of how I feel. And I don't think those are that far off to get. But, you know, I'm just afraid that people think that the uptick is going to be 40 home runs next year. And you just, you don't really see that often. But I don't know if any of us would be surprised. We'd be elated, but I don't know if we'd be surprised. We'd still be surprised.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't, maybe not have even worded that right, but.
No, you're right. I mean, it's possible he's going into his 27 year. You know, going, you know, staying healthy, you could see him add 3 or 4 home runs, but I think most people would say he's more likely to, you know, step off a little bit and be more like, more like that 30 home run guy, which is great. And hey, you know, if he hits 40, you know, nobody's going to stop him. I mean, you know, even though Mike Matheny doesn't like the home run, you know, I mean, he's not going to stop him. So, we'll see how that goes. All right. This is going to be fun. Our friend Kyle, caller 416, Kyle Reese, who, as you know, is over at Birds on the Black, prospect to be named later with Colin Gardner on that podcast. If you're not downloading that, you should be. His question, his first question, he has two of them, but his first question is, taking your own personal biases and love for Wainwright out of the equation, do you believe that he is one of the 5 best starting pitching options entering the 2018 season?
You want me to go?
Oh yeah, go ahead. I do. I'll let you do it.
I do. I do think he's one of the best starting options. I think he's, we're not going to get vintage Wainwright, but I do think he's going to have a good year. And it may be his last one. We don't know. I know there's a second part to this question with somebody else,
yeah,
but,
we'll get to that a little bit.
Yeah, but, I do. I mean, I couldn't pinpoint anyone right now that to throw the question back out, is Flaherty the answer there, or is it someone outside of the organization that they're assuming? Because I took the question as, is he one of the best 5 starting options right now? And I think that it's hands down that he is. And not just because of what, that I've lost faith in Flaherty, but that's just kind of the transition to how these guys go. You know, I don't think Weaver would have started last year, even if he was healthy. You know, where this year he's kind of made that step, which I kind of think Flaherty steps into this year. I still think Wainwright is your best chance to get outs and to keep you into ball games right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think Flaherty needs some more time in Memphis. You know, are you talking, is Adam Wainwright one of the 5 best, you know, arms in the organization? No, probably not. I think that there's better arms, but, you know, are those guys ready to be major league pitchers on a regular basis? Are they the ones you want to rely on? I'm not quite there yet. Now, I think we're going to be able to tell fairly early on Wainwright because he's got to have his velocity back.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, again, you take it for what it's worth because it's Adam Wainwright and he's always relentlessly optimistic about things. But he did say that the surgery this offseason is something he should have done a while back. That he's feeling better. And I gotta feel like that's gonna, I mean, he's not gonna be throwing 95 or anything like that, but I think he's gonna be more reasonable. And I think that, you know, yeah, he's gonna have a line, he may not have a sub-4 ERA line, but he's not gonna be the guy. And realize, last year, you know, what, he had that stretch of what, 6-7 starts in a row where, let me see where he was very good, before the arm everything kind of fell apart on him. I think that you'll see some clunkers out of him, but I think, yeah, overall, let's see, yeah, I was, well, you know, and you do that, and, you know, I don't know. I think overall he's going to be pretty good. But yeah, there's going to be some bad games in there. You know, you look at what he did, you know, that was a 409 from July 8th till the end of the year, and even that was some of those really bad, he had nothing games. You know, there were stretches. You think, like, you know, he had 7 scoreless innings against the Cubs. He had 7 scoreless innings in Colorado. He had 6 scoreless innings against the Dodgers. He was kind of, you know, feast or famine last year, and I think he evens that out a little bit, and I think he's better.
Sure, I agree. I mean, I think there's a pride factor that I kind of go back to that, to the game in San Francisco that, to kind of save the season, to where we thought that, you know, he was dead man walking, and he, you know, pitched 7 strong, kept him in the game, and got the ball to Neshek, and it just wasn't meant to be. You know, Neshek gave up the home run and whatnot. I feel like we're going to have a lot of those performances this year out of him. Really something to prove, a really motivated starter where he has a very acceptable year.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead. We'll come back to Kyle's other question in a minute, but we'll get the one that kind of went along with this. It's from Luke Flush, Luke J F O S U on Twitter. His question was, what stat line is a successful season for Wainwright? And if he struggles, how many starts do you give him before making a change? Successful stat line, I think if he's got an ERA even of 410, 412, I mean, well, even, you know, a run lower than last year's 511 is not a bad year for a guy that, you know, it's honestly fourth or fifth starter. So if he can have a 4 ERA, if he can win 10 games, if he can strike out, you know, about 100 batters and throw about 160 innings, 170 innings, you know, you'd like to see more, but I think that's not a bad one. You know, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Whenever we were asked the question today, my mind started racing because I was thinking, I think he gets almost a full season before they were to call anything. And then you're like, you know, it seems like that's kind of changed, that it's not necessarily, I think you're right on the fact that there needs to be not necessarily improvement. There needs to be some stability early to show that he's healthy, to show that, that he belongs. Cause I think that's a big question mark. And it seems like they've even mentioned that's where if they feel like there's a rotation weak link, that may be him. And that's gotta be tough for them to say. But in order for them to say it, it's gotta be fairly true. So I don't know. I'm riding the fence on this so hard because I know they would have a hard time yanking him from the rotation. But, you know, at what point are they able to go to him and say, hey, look, this isn't helping the team out, and he's going to be understandable about it. So I don't know what figures to throw out that way. I'm just kind of looking at a timeline to where, you know, we're 3 or 4 or 5, 6 starts where he just gets shelled or can't go past the third inning, which seemed to be an issue last year, you know, at points to where just couldn't get any guys out that second time around. When that becomes evident that that's not going to change, I don't know how long the strength would be for them to let that roll out before they make that decision.
Yeah, I think, of course, it's always going to depend on what they've got at Memphis. You know, if Flaherty comes out and he's just tearing it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that impacts it. You know, if Dakota Hudson's doing similar, you know, that might.
Gomber, maybe.
But I think that, again, you're going to know. If a Wainwright's throwing 90, 95, and he has 1 or 2 bad outings in the first 6 or 7 games, they'll probably stick with him some more. But if he's throwing, you know, meatballs, and he's just getting hammered. You know, I think there is some sort of discussion with him. I mean, it's like, because Adam Wainwright's, you know, as positive and optimistic as he is, I think he's also kind of prideful of what he's got, and I don't think he wants to go out mm-hmm. with, I mean, he's got an ERA of 4.62 last, you know, in 16, a 5.11 last year. I don't think he wants to just keep pitching like that. And if it looks like that's all that's going to be, you know, do they talk to him and say, you know, does he go to the bullpen, or does he just say, you know, look, I can't do it anymore, and he retires midseason? You know, I don't think that's out of the question, but I think that, you know, if he's gotten 7 to 10 starts and his ERA is around 5.5 or 6 without any real signs that it's going to get better, mm-hmm. Then it's probably, that would probably be about when they're going to make a change.
Yeah, I hope that's not the case. I mean, I hope that he has a great year, and best case scenario for Cardinals fans, we're arguing whether they should extend him or not.
Yeah, and that's going to be an interesting discussion, I guess. That's for another time, and because there's a whole lot of, like I said, a whole lot of different ways you can go there. All right, Kyle says his other question is, do you think that Grichuk to Toronto trade is a concession on both ends after they failed to make a trade work out for Josh Donaldson? So basically what Kyle's saying is this is like the consolation. It's like they tried for Donaldson, never could work, and so did they make the Grichuk trade as consolation. What do you think?
It wouldn't surprise me, but I never got the feeling they were going to trade Donaldson. Yeah. Not for lack of trying,
yeah.
But I just don't know if that was ever on the table. But that hotline's open, just like we had talked about before with Shapiro. So that it does surprise me that they did multiple moves. I don't know. I want to say no right away and think that that probably hasn't even really been. I feel like they discussed it because I think they pursued him, but I don't. I just don't get the feeling that Toronto ever budged on the fact that they were going to trade him.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that you know, this trade may have come up while they were talking about other things with Donaldson, but this was not because they couldn't get Donaldson done or they're not going to revisit Donaldson later on. You know,
yeah.
This may be, like you said, they've been talking. You know, come mid-season, if Toronto's out of it, you know, maybe that's what you see. It's now that they've got that, you know, connection. I mean, they sent Diaz up there. It's interesting to see how team centric some of these trades are. I mean, you know, they've made two trades with Seattle since Kirsch
yeah.
came up. And they've made the two trades with Toronto. I mean, they've obviously made the one with Miami. I don't think it really had much to do with anything, except the only connection was probably they spent some time talking about both. They may have had some trade at one point in time that, you know, they proposed some trade that said Grichuk and this and that for Donaldson. And they said, no, we're not moving Donaldson, but we are interested in Grichuk. What can we do, you know, by that? Could have been something like that, but I don't know that there was a whole lot of a connection there.
True. Yeah, I kind of agree with that.
All right, our last question is from Austin Lamb, one of your cohorts, Lambo_26. If you were Mo, what offers would you make to any of the remaining free agents? And if you're not interested in any of them, then how come? You know, I pull up the list of free agents that are still out there. Yeah. It's hard to know. I mean, you know, would you make an offer to JD Martinez? If you so, where do you put him? All that kind of stuff. I think if you're looking at somebody, you know, maybe you would make some sort of offer to Yu Darvish. I don't know if you want to spend that kind of money. And the Cardinals seem to be very hesitant to lock in those long-term deals, especially on the pitching staff. I don't know. Is there anybody out there that just strikes your fancy that they need to get?
I don't know. It is, I don't, you know, I would love, you're right. I keep thinking that the prices are going to drop to where they are able to make a play on some of that. But, you know, I wonder now if it's not, I don't know how to say it. Is the roster set? Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't know if there's even any room now for them to make a play on one of these guys because, you know, Martinez isn't a fit. I think they're, I don't think Hosmer's a fit to where we've talked about it before. Even if that fell under their lap, it seemed like that would cause, yeah, he's probably a good player to bring in, but if you don't know, it doesn't fit the roster. It seemed like there'd have to be a corresponding move made with that. And I felt like that with the Yelich deal as well. That's kind of why. Even if they would have traded him where I would have think he may ultimately be the better player long term than Ozuna, it still would have caused maybe more problems than it solved. Moustakas doesn't seem like there's a lot of interest there. Mm-hmm. And I thought that may be one of those you can get to where you really extend the bench, but you know, I don't see that happening either. So Arrieta's probably still going to sign for more than you want to pay for him. I think that he's one of those you could probably get on a high AAV. In lesser years. Darvish, I think, is the age where you're still going to have to give him 5 or 6 years. So I don't know. If there was one that I wanted to get, it would probably be a starter just to lock down just that solid rotation. But I just don't see a move out there for any of those guys, any of the big guys anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if you could get Holland for a lot less than we've been talking, you know, for, you know, like 2 years and I don't know. 20 million, which would be, you know, probably you can't. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You can get him for a significant bargain to where you could add him to the back of the rotation. Yeah, I could see that. You're right with Moustakas. It would be kind of interesting to let him, you know, again, maybe some short term deal or, you know, 3 year deal or something like that. And then let Jerko be that sub. But, you know, they've talked about Carpenter being that sub, and if they're both doing that, you know, what can, you know, how does that work? You're right. You know, you got Martinez. How does he fit into this picture? I mean, some of these make sense if you take, now, if you could turn, anyway, if you turn around and trade, Michael Wacha and two others for, you know, Chris Archer, well, that's still the, you know, maybe that's when you go out and sign another pitcher because you've got a hole or you've traded away some prospects. But for right now, yeah, I mean, there's probably guys that could help your team. But where do you put them in the roster without cutting people, without, you know, really limiting playing time? I think that it would take a trade first and then a signing. And, you know, it's hard, it doesn't really see any trades out there. So, you're kind of right. I mean, we're kind of getting to that point where, yeah, this would be nice, but how does he, you know, who does he supplant and, how does that work? And it becomes very difficult to see. So I don't think we're going to see much. I think probably, like you said, they're probably are pretty much done, with that, unless there's some sort of smaller deal out there. It would be kind of funny after all this time if they, wound up with Lance Lynn again, but.
Yeah, that's it. That is an interesting situation.
Yeah. But, anyway. All right. Well, let's, we've already run about our hour, but let's go ahead and get three or four of these, favorite Cardinals in. Again, you know by now, Alan and I, you know, did this, asked you for your opinions, at the beginning of the off season. You gave them, we ranked them, and we have been doing this for quite some time. And if you go to the Meet Me at Mutual Twitter feed, you can find the pinned tweet has the link to the spreadsheet, so you can see all the ones we've already talked about. And we've got a link to the, whatever show we did there. Last time when we had Adam on, we did the ones from 100 to 140 points. Tonight, I think we got four guys that are between 140 and 200 points, so we're going to do all four of these guys. And we start off at 143 points with a current Cardinal, a very, controversial current Cardinal. We're talking about Matt Carpenter. Matt Carpenter got 143 points. No first place votes, but really kind of spread around throughout everything else. You know, obviously, like I said, Matt Carpenter has been kind of that whipping boy, powder keg, type of player over the last year or so. So it's kind of interesting to see him ranked this high.
Yeah, it does say a lot. Probably some recency bias. We know that, but and not too dang recent because he drew more flack this year than any player we've had in a long time for somebody of his magnitude. I really like Carp. I think it says a lot about a guy who's able to hit the way that he does. Hasn't changed his game much. I think he's probably tried to hit for a little more power than he should have. I think he gets caught in the middle of that because he's had to be everything in the lineup several times. All while playing different positions and learning some new ones. I think Carpenter is going to go down as a very good Cardinal when it's all said and done because he fits a lot of the persona that comes down to he meets a lot of those, the generalizations of a great Cardinal, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to watch him. You know, Carpenter comes up, he started his career late, and so he's going to be playing his year 32 season now, which, you know, kind of typically is starting to hit the down, you know, still some good years, but you're starting to look at the downhill side of a guy's career. And he's got to hit better than he did last year. You know, he hit, about as many home runs and he had a lot of similar numbers, but he had 30 points on his batting average. And I think that's, you know, while batting average isn't everything, obviously, he needs to, that's part of that on base percentage that he has. You know, his OPS was 60 points less last year. He needs to get that back up in there in that 880, range. And especially he may be leading off, he may not be leading off, probably won't be leading off. But there's a lot, you know, there's a lot to like about him. The doubles, the eye. I just think, you know, if his shoulder's healthy, maybe we'll see a little bit more out of him. You know, the strikeouts were so high last year for him, although they were really high in 15 as well. They were higher in 15. I don't know. You know, like I said, I think that maybe he just had some bad luck last year.
And he may have been hurt.
Yeah.
You know, that's some of the deal too that we may overlook a little bit. I feel he pressed last year, especially starting the season as a three-hole hitter. I think tried to turn it around. A lot of his strikeouts years have come when he's muscled up too though. And hit a lot of his, you know, 25 plus home run seasons. He is a doubles machine. You know me, and I've been like this from toward the end of the season, and I wanted it last year toward the end of the offseason, and I've said it from the beginning. I think Carpenter is a much better hitter in front of Ozuna. I think that their lineup is really based, and I'm going to do two different posts on the top and bottom half of the lineup, and I will tell you, I fully think that he's going to really be an asset hitting in the middle of the order this year. I think that there's a lot of things in the top part of the order that'll help him out and Ozuna in the back part that'll really help him out due to his being selective and getting back to being just being a doubles crusher and he's not going to have to muscle up that I felt like he's felt like he's had to do the last 3 years and his numbers have shown and he's tried to hit home runs and they're great. I think he still may be able to hit the 20 to 25 home run mark and drive in a number of runs and not have the pressure on him to do so. And I think that the game's going to come to him a little bit easier this year just by some aspects on the top half of the lineup and right behind him.
Yeah. You know, obviously Carpenter's got his flaws.
Sure.
And it was interesting. I mean, he addressed that at winter warmup. He said he needed to do better on his base running, and he'd better on his fielding, and he kind of felt Oquendo would help him with both. And so we'll see if that's the case. And if he's hitting third and Ozuna's hitting 30-something home runs behind him, he didn't have to do a whole lot of base running.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. And we've talked about it. He's a bit of a roster clog just because of where he has to, where he plays and how that, you know, messes with some things you can do. But, you know, he's still a very good player. And, you know, I think he'll be an asset to this year's team. Speaking of this year's team, we got another guy. And this is recency bias. I'll tell you that right now. But, we're at 157 points. It's Tommy Pham.
I knew it right when you said it.
And Tommy Pham has 4 first place votes, which is more than anybody that we've talked about so far. I mean, like, almost combined. not quite, but, easily better than what we've got so far. He's got more first place votes than, I mean, you're getting into the Hall of Famers, basically,
yeah,
before you get to more first place votes than Tommy Pham. So, and again, Tommy Pham had a great year. Tommy Pham's got a very interesting personality, which you're either going to really like or really not. There's not a whole lot of middle ground on what Tommy Pham says, I don't think. I think that if we did this poll again 5 years from now, I mean, depending, again, obviously depending on what Tommy Pham does, but I don't think Tommy Pham would be this high.
It's exactly, you know, the sad thing about it is he is the rusty nail right now. And that draws a lot of attention because it you're right about the personality, to where I came full circle. I was like, I'm not going to like this very much when he came up, to where I really like it now. You know what I mean? It should come across as more arrogance to me, but it just doesn't. I don't know if that's just his way of building his confidence up. You know, maybe even stupid to say. I don't know. But why I worry about saying this is I'm not so sure that he would get 4 first place votes or be where he is in 5 months.
Yeah.
Much less 5 years. You know, not that I expect a major drop off, and I think he's going to be a huge part of the team just because I like to move to center. I think there is a motivating factor with him in that. I like him at the top of the lineup because of the base running, and I appreciate a good base runner, and he's a very good base runner. So I think he's going to be a big part of the team. you're right on about the recency bias, just because I can't think of nobody off the top of my, we're on in agreement here that this is, I'm glad everybody voted, but.
Well, and again, I got no problem, you know, and it's, I can see why people.
Sure.
Are really excited about Tommy Pham. And there's really good reasons to be. He wants to be 30-30 this year. It's not out of the question that he will be. We've got to see him stay
healthy. I agree. Yeah, I completely agree.
We got to see him stay healthy.
Well, and the perseverance. Yeah, the perseverance. Yeah. I mean, that says it all as well. I mean, you got to respect him for that. I completely agree. And I like watching him play.
Yeah. But, yeah, when you look at the fact that, you know, Tommy Pham ranked higher than people like, you know, Red Shane Deist and Mike Shannon and, you know, others like that, it is a little interesting to see. So,
let's hope he stays at the top of.
Yeah, and you know, if he has three or four more years like he does this year,
may very well.
You know, if we did this in 5 years, he'd be out even be higher. Because if he can put those kind of years together, he's going to keep a pretty solid fan base.
Yeah.
So, all right. With 167 points, sure. ten more.
And his
points.
Workouts are impressive.
Oh yeah. There's no doubt that he's. I mean, he's not.
Yeah, resting. It's pretty impressive. Yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, but he's not resting on his laurels at all. He's prepared to work at it, and that's an amazing thing too.
Mm-hmm.
All right, 167 exactly. Points. You know, one of my favorites, and a huge story, as we all know. It's Rick Ankiel. Rick Ankiel.
Oh, nice.
Pitcher turned outfielder. I remember the home run he hit, you know, when he came back as an outfielder. I remember watching that game against the Braves in the playoffs and like, what in the world is going on? And then to see him come out against the Mets the next time, and it was just the same thing. And it just, you still you still wish you could have seen, for as good, as interesting as the story is, you just wish you could have seen Rick Ankiel be the pitcher that he looked like he was going to be for a long period of time.
Yeah, and that, you know, there's times where I kind of hate bringing up his pitching because it's so painful what went on in that playoff. I know that you and I talked about it on here before, and I've told everybody. I saw him come through here through Tulsa, and boy, he was dominant. I mean, and he already packed the house.
Oh yeah.
Whenever, because the name was so widely known at that point, and he was impressive. I mean, you hardly saw a left-hander throw that hard with that kind of command. I mean, you knew that he wasn't going to be around long. So that's what was so painful about it. And that year before everything went off the rails, he was one of those guys that you felt like if he got the ball, they had a good chance of winning. That's why it's just painful to kind of bring up now. I mean, the redemption story is great, and I love the fact that he's back in St. Louis now. Mm-hmm. And that says a lot about him. But it was ugly. You know, it was. I've yet to read the book. I know that you have.
Yeah, good book.
But you've told me a lot about it. But there's times where I honestly struggle to bring up the pitching.
Yeah. It's he was just – I don't remember as much, you know, 2000. I mean, I remember him coming up in 99, and I remember how well he did in 2000, but I don't, you know, didn't get to watch it as much back then, so I don't remember seeing it. I think I've told you before, I have a game on VHS tape over here, which I can't actually watch because I don't have a VHS player anymore. the one game that he won in 2001, he gets the Diamondbacks. He pitched five innings. It's the game, I'm pretty sure it's the game that he says in the book that he got drank vodka before the game.
Yeah.
Trying to calm his nerves. Pitched five innings. He was shaky. It was the game that I first figured out that Albert Pujols was going to be good because he took I think it was a 3-2. Is it a curveball or something low in the zone from Randy Johnson? The guy, you know, rookie should have flailed at it. And he turned it, he smoked it for a double. And I was like, there might be something to this kid after all.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just watch it. I mean, it was just, I mean, I had kept him on my fantasy league. I don't know how long, hoping he would make that comeback. And you would talk about, you know, they go out in the spring training and they kept putting him on the backfields and you just kept hoping he would come back, and he came back then in 04, I think, as a reliever, and, you know, made it back and kind of had it under control, but then, you know, then he could reinvent himself as that outfielder and a really good hitting outfielder for the fact that, you know, he wasn't doing that very much. You know, he was solid, you know, kind of bounced around then after his time in St. Louis, but just a remarkable story that you hate that he had to go through, because you read, like say, you're right, you're reading that book and you hear how much that, you know, that took the toll on him, and partly because you didn't know how to fix it. I mean, it wasn't, hey, my mechanics are off, I just need to fit, you know, hold the ball longer or something. It was mental, and he couldn't get over it. And as much as he tried, he couldn't. And that was the pain, as it says. You're just glad that he had the chance to come back as an outfielder, because it could have been the Steve Blass or the mm-hmm. you know, some of the others that, you know, once they're done, they're done. You know, Blass, of course, stayed in the game as a broadcaster and stuff, but at least he had the, you know, a little bit better finale to his career.
Yeah, definitely in a rally, and it shows how fragile the game is.
Absolutely. All right. Our last one for tonight, our last one under 200 points with 183 points. Are you ready for this?
Let's do it.
Are you ready? It's your man, Tom Herr.
Oh, nice.
So I know Tom Herr is your guy, so I'm going to let you go with this.
The best stat line of any Cardinal player ever. This was brought up. I remember it. I remember it vividly, and it was brought up in Bill James' book. Was the year in 1985. Should have been MVP. Could have been MVP. Knocked in 110 runs, but do you remember how many home runs he had?
None.
Eight.
Eight. Okay.
Eight home runs, less than double digit home runs, and drove in 110 runs. Great second baseman. That lineup was amazing. I remember it more of it went Coleman, Herr, McGee, Clark in the early days. And then sometimes Ozzie would hit second, and I know that, that Herr would hit third, but that infield was loaded. I mean, they were really good. That was Pendleton, Smith, Herr, Clark, in 82, it was Obergefell, Ozzie, Herr, and, they were loaded with Hernandez, and, great team, greatly overlooked guy. He's another one that I've always kind of wondered, you know, he knocked around minor league coaching for a long time, but never moved up any more than that, but, he was just a great piece, great fit to a great team in those 80s teams, and he was one of my favorites. One of the reasons that we liked him so much too is he looks just like my uncle, curly hair and all. So, but he was always one of our favorites. He's amazing.
Yeah, it's fun. Actually, I don't know if he follows you, but he might, because if he's still on Twitter. For a while there, he had an account on Twitter.
And yeah. Oh, yeah.
Following a lot of pokes. I'm not, it's not pulling up right now, so I don't know if he's, oh, there he is. Yeah, yeah, Tom Herr Baseball. Yep. Following 9,735 people, so he's, he's, gonna check them all, but,
good for him. I remembered the announcement of the trade for Bernanski. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those, things were just crumbling, you know, from that team. I mean, you still had Ozzie and Vince was still around at that point. You still had McGee, but it just wasn't the same. You know, that was kind of the end of, the Whitey's era. And, it was painful. I remember the trade and thought, man, I really didn't like Bernanski as a Twin. You know, that Minnesota team was tough to like, the one that, you know, where, they beat, of course, in 87 when they won the series. But, yeah, it's painful to talk about. But, but yeah, I just remember the trade. It sucked.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember, like I said, I came around 88, was 87, 88 is when I started paying attention. And so I do remember him getting traded for Brunansky, finding it interesting that they was traded for, to the team that, you know, had just beaten them. And getting back, should have been a power hitter and now is, well, sadly, associated more with, cards.
yeah,
Tom Bernanski probably ought to sue, for that, but you know, shaming his good name by being associated with him. But, yeah, I mean, her was that, you know, and it kind of, somewhat, like I said, somewhat underrated, because of guys like Ozzie on that team.
Absolutely.
And McGee and Coleman, the speedsters and stuff. But he was the one driving them in, for the mm-hmm. most part. So, interesting to see. So, all right. Well, that'll take us, up to, like I said, up to about the 200 level. We've got 17 more players to go. Not going to obviously do them tonight, but hopefully over the next two or three shows we'll get this done. We wanted this to help us fill some time this winter, and so far it's done that, and hopefully we'll get it done, well, before opening day at least, probably sometime middle of the of spring training. Alan, before we go, anything you want to talk about? Like you said, you got your lineup post coming out pretty soon.
Got the lineup post coming out, and then over at Redbird Daily, we're wrapping up the top 100. You and I'll have one more show before my next entry. I'm just going to, I'll just say that mine's high. It's
high.
A number three, and it is, it's been tough. I've had to write and rewrite because I don't want to upset some of the fan base, in particular a relative of said number three.
Well, I think I know maybe who you're talking about then. So you may have given away too much right there.
But, all right.
Anyway. All right. Well, I've got nothing. now I'm going to try to do a Periscope. Monday night.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
About 7:30 Central. See how that goes. Tried Facebook Live last year. It didn't really go. But I'm thinking Periscope maybe with the Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely.
We might do a little bit more. You better have some questions because obviously I don't have a whole lot to talk about otherwise. Other than that, you know, I don't know. Starting the Playing Pepper series, mm-hmm. that's just getting that out. It's going to be a while off. Not much else. They're just going to write when we can.
Yeah. It seems like it's getting into be writing season, though.
Yeah, it won't be too long. Yeah. I do have plans for a post. I don't know when I'm going to write it, but it's going to address, as I put on Twitter, address the question about Cardinal baseball that I get the most often. So,
interesting.
Yeah, it's not really. But I'm going to try to, it's a post you can write this time of year when there's not as much going on. It may not be a very long post, but, I will try to write that maybe sometime this week. So anyway, keep following us on Twitter. Check us out on the blogs, and we do, hey, you know, if you're listening to us on iTunes, and a lot of you are, just, you know, scroll down there, give us a review, give us a rating. We'd love to see those. If you're coming from someplace else and you've got the option to rate and review, do that as well. But, you know, the better our reviews are, the more likely somebody's going to stumble across this. So if you're enjoying it and you think somebody should stumble across it, then go ahead and give us a 4 or 5 or, don't give us a 1. I think we're better than a 1-star.
Yeah, we're good guys.
Come on, we can get, you know, maybe a 3. I can go with a 3, yeah. But, yeah. you know, I think we're better than a 1-star. And I don't say that lightly, but I think we're better than a 1-star. So. Anyway. Alrighty. We will be back at you, as far as I know, we'll be back at you next week. Maybe hopefully back on our regular Friday. But we'll just see how the schedules go. So until then, that's Alan and I'm Daniel. Good night.
Good night.
Sutter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss. And that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.